Okay, we're in chapter 21, which can be found, and Tanya on the bottom number is page 87, on the top number is page 52. We are continuing with this way of understanding how we have a innate natural love for Hashem, which is a question which was asked back in 18. And it basically relates to the essence of our soul. So what he's talking about in chapter 20 is he gave an example of the relationship of speech to the essence of the soul. And that there is, the essence of the soul wants something, as want and desire is an expression of it's an essential soul expression. And then it goes through the whole process where it comes in and flows into letters of thought, and then finally letters of speech. Okay, so now the whole point of that, though, is just to use an example to understand the relationship that we have with Hashem, our essence with Hashem's essence, and that is what is discussed in chapter 21. So he says, "Midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shalai K'midas Basar Adam." The way Hashem is actually no way parallel to the way that we are. It's true that we were created as a result of the mimer of one of the 10 utterances of Nasa Adam Betzel Mekid Maseno, let us make man in our form and our image. So that means that the human being is created in the image of God, but that is only just a loose example. That's not, cannot be for sure taken literally, because God is not corporeal, nor does God have any type of a shape. To understand it, though, is there are various parallels in looking at us,
right,
that we can understand how Hashem operates. But when push comes to shove, the whole paradigm breaks down. Because you really can't compare Hashem to anything physical.
Right.
Okay, you can try and get an understanding, and that's the Rambam goes into discussion in Hilchos Yesodei Soteria, right at the beginning of the Rambam, when it talks about, well, why is it that the Torah says things like God spoke, and this is the finger of God and the hand of God, is because we got to say something.
Right.
And then to try and give an example as to what it is that's going on, so then we have to say, okay, so if it says spoke, what does it mean if you're talking about God who doesn't have a body, doesn't have a mouth?
Right.
So he says, "Shehaadam kishemidaber," when a person speaks, "daber dibor," some speech, "harihevel hadibor shibapiv hu morgish v'nira daber bifnei hatzmai moved on mesharshay." When you've heard the expression, "But I wish I could suck that one back."
Take that back, yeah.
I wish I could just pull those words right back and just, because once you say them,
they're forever.
They're gone. They're out. Yeah. They are not part of you.
Right.
Okay. They are traveling now at approximately 600 miles an hour out into the universe.
Right.
At the speed of sound.
Mm.
Okay, or 700, whatever it happens to be.
738 or something, whatever.
Right. my sister, when she was 8 years old, and I was like 4 or 5, and she was 9, she's like 4 years older than me, or so 3 years older than me, and she had figured out that about the idea of speed, that speed travels so fast, you know, and light. She said, if you could travel the speed of light, then you'd be able to catch up to everything that was said. And somewhere out in the universe, you could hear George Washington speak.
Mm-hmm.
That's where it's like all those sound waves are like out there someplace.
I've heard this statement before. The difficulty I have with it is that,
of course, it's not true. This was an 8-year-old telling a 4-year-old.
Yeah. No, I know, but it's been purported years and years and years by different people. The difficulty is sound waves are a result of friction from molecules.
Correct.
The whole friction thing breaks down after a while.
I mean, yeah,
you know,
that's
so
true.
Sound can only go so far till
it dissipates.
It's dead.
Right. So, like an 8-year-old, in the mind of an 8-year-old, right.
it's a great idea.
The point is that once you say something, it is no longer part of you.
Right.
The best you can do is go, right. Oops.
Yeah.
I'm
dead
sorry.
Dumb. Oops.
Insert foot.
Shoot.
Yep.
Dead dumb.
Yes. Open mouth. Insert foot.
Up to your knees.
Yep. Exactly. Yes. Okay. Because now it is something. That what is it separated from? It's separate from Shor Shoshen Esther Sfiras and Nefeshot Tzmei. That this word is an expression of the soul, since it is that a person is called Min HaMedaber. Okay, you have the four different categories. You have the inanimate, the vegetable, the animal, and then you have people, and people are referred to in this as you have Domim Chai Tzameach Umedaber. What qualifies the person different than an animal is our ability to speak.
Yes.
Because in able to be able to speak, we have to first express it in rational terms. We have to be able to have cognition, thought, something which animals don't readily have.
To endlessly bombast anyone.
Correct. So, the... I saw a great line today in a book that my wife is making everybody that she meets read. It's called The Zookeeper's Wife. It's a story about this Polish couple that hid families in the Warsaw Zoo during World War II.
Okay.
So I read this line, just all the whole things, the whole trials and tribulations. And she writes, it's mostly taken from the woman's own diary. So she... She says she's an animal trainer.
Right.
Okay. She says in 3 months you can take a totally wild animal and make them totally and completely tame.
Okay.
But a person, you can tame them for millennia, and just a few short moments
they can become
become absolute barbarians.
Yes.
That's
yeah. You know, so
beautiful, brilliant life.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so the we are people, which what determines us to be people is the fact that we have the ability to speak. That is what our essence is. Okay, if you analyze the essence, what would you see? You'd see speaking.
Yes.
Because that's where Min HaMedaber, that's what we're called.
Right.
So this essential expression is expressed in a revealed way by what we call speech.
Mm.
So this, any utterance that you're saying is an expression of the essence, the essence of the soul.
Mm.
But the point being is once you said it, it's not part of the essence of the soul anymore.
Right. It's conveyance.
Avol HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when you're talking about Hashem, Ein Diburo Muvdol Memena Yisbarach Has V'Shalom Ki Ein Davar Chutz Memena V'Leis Aser Panim Menei. When you're talking about Hashem, there's nothing separated from Hashem. And he even goes so far as to say, Chas V'Shalom. Okay? Now, the Alter Rebbe, I don't know if I mentioned this before.
Yeah.
The Alter Rebbe was very exact in Tanya. In writing Tanya, he was letter perfect. It once happened, I was in a Tanya class. And the way that the Tanya class was conducted is the teacher would explain a piece of Tanya,
yes.
And then on our own time we would go and we would review it, and the next day somebody from the class would say it back to make sure that it was given over properly, it was understood.
Okay.
So it happened that this Bacher was giving it over. And he put in something that says this terrible thing that happened, and he put in the word Chas V'Shalom. So the rabbi stopped him and said, wait a minute, does it say in the words that you're reading the word Chas V'Shalom?
Mm-hmm.
He says, no. He said, the Alter Rebbe does use the expression Chas V'Shalom. He puts it in regular intervals at different places. So if he didn't put it in, it means that it doesn't deserve to have a Chas V'Shalom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't need to say God forbid at that point.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So where he does put it in, like over here.
Yeah.
Where he says that there's nothing separated from Hashem Yisbarach Chas V'Shalom.
Right.
Okay? That something could possibly be separate from Hashem. Because what does that do if you say that this thing is separate from Hashem?
It's another deity.
Correct. You have just minimalized Hashem right out of existence.
Right.
Our Hashem is no longer our Hashem.
Right.
You see how
so?
Yeah. Okay, because we believe that Hashem is a totality. Hashem is a kol yachol, is the expression. Hashem can do anything. And if there's going to be this something which exists outside of Hashem, so you're going to say Hashem is a kol yachol, Hashem can do anything except be that entity.
Right.
So if Hashem can't be that entity because it's separate from Hashem, then Hashem can't be a kol yachol. Hashem can't be an entirety. And if Hashem's not an entirety, then Hashem is not Hashem. And you don't have an Hashem. So therefore, he says, Achach t'sholem. God forbid to even think that it's possible that there could be anything which is removed from Hashem's existence.
Right.
And then he goes so far as to say even further. Because there is nothing outside of Hashem, and there's no place void of Hashem. Okay, the leis asar panim minay. There's no place void of Hashem. And it's really an amazing thing. Later on in chapter 7 in Shar Yichud Ve'amunah, the Alter Rebbe takes down, the translation is my own, takes down the Vilna Gaon for a mistranslation that he makes in the writings of the Arizal.
Really?
That there, what does he write? He writes that he says that Hashem should forgive these great Chachamim because they are Yirei Shamayim, they're Maminim, B'nai Maminim, they're believers, the children of believers. And it's unfortunate that he didn't have a Rebbe, because who's going to teach the Vilna Gaon anything? This is the Vilna Gaon.
Right.
And so the Vilna Gaon actually wrote more books about Kabbalah than he did about Gemara.
Mm-hmm.
People don't realize that. Okay?
And the point is, he was qualified.
You would think so, but he kind of didn't understand any of them then. You might want to check that. Because he translated the word Tzimtzum and Siluk Kipshutai. The word Siluk means removed. Hashem had to remove himself in order to make a place for this world. And it doesn't mean that. It just means that Hashem had to contain his revelation.
Right.
Is what it means.
Right. Yeah.
By saying so, and I don't understand how is it that the Vilna Gaon should make a statement like that if it says clearly in the Zohar, and if the Vilna Gaon was writing things all about Kabbalah, I'm sure he must have written things on Zohar.
Right.
He must have come across this expression, Deleis Aser Panoi Minei. If I know about it, for sure the Vilna Gaon knows about it, that there's no place void of Hashem.
Right.
Because it's an impossibility, because Hashem to move away. Hashem cannot do that.
Yeah.
Because that creates, again, an area where Hashem is every place except
there's an
place.
Entity. There's an entity.
So what that does is that already limits Hashem and already makes Hashem have a corporeal body.
Right.
And that's not what we believe about Hashem.
Well, you...
Go ahead.
Anything... the terms don't work. But whether it was just, even if it's, if you want to call it just a void.
Void of what?
If
it's saying void of godly
the
revelation.
The non-existence of God.
You can't say that.
Exactly.
You can't say that.
You can't, exactly.
So what did the Arizal mean? The Arizal meant void of godly revelation.
Yeah.
In other words, Hashem contained and removed his infinite revelation. Thus, by revealing his finite revelation.
Right.
Because you have to say Hashem is finite as much as you say Hashem is infinite.
Correct.
Because if you're going to say Hashem is not infinite, if you're going to say Hashem is not finite,
then we don't exist.
Then Hashem can't be infinite either.
Okay.
Because any finite, all infinity contains every finite set.
Right. Correct.
Okay. The only thing is that we'll talk about this when we get to Shari Yechud V'amunah. How big is Hashem's finiteness? It's infinite.
Infinite, that's all.
Okay, so it's infinite finiteness.
That's working.
Which is fine. You know, that's good.
Yeah.
You know. You with me there?
Yeah.
Okay. V'lachin ein dibur yisbarakid v'reinu chas v'sholom. Therefore, Hashem's speech is not like our speech. What happens when we talk? Not a whole lot. Especially if you're talking to your kids. Okay, not a whole lot happens by speech.
No.
It doesn't take up much energy. It doesn't really accomplish a whole lot. It does accomplish, yes. It is called in the Zohar, his speech is called Milsa Zutrasa, or Milsa Zutrasa. It's called a small action. Meaning that something's getting accomplished. You know the story with the Baal Shem Tov, that two Talmidim were yelling at each other, and one of them got so mad at the other guy, he says, I'm going to rip you like a fish. And the Baal Shem Tov said, wait a minute, come over here. Okay, close your eyes, put your hands on each other's shoulders. The Baal Shem Tov put his hands on his shoulders, and they saw what was going on in Shemayim, how one was ripping the other one like a fish. And he chastised them to be more careful with what they say, because the effect that a person's words does affect the entire spectrum of creation. Okay, and it's true, with words you could destroy an entire creation. It's possible. Yes. That's why it says it has to be careful in davening, for example. Mm-hmm. So it's in Shulchan Aruch. Okay? That when you're saying, specifically the Shema, which is Midderaisa, mm-hmm. it's from the Torah, mm-hmm. so it's a Torah mitzvah, you have to be careful how you pronounce the words. Because if you're not careful, you could wind up saying, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Acher.
Right.
Which means Hashem is another.
Right.
Okay, that there's not there's a Shem, and then there's another. Okay, which that you see what that accomplishes.
Sure.
As opposed to the big difference between Echad and Echar, is totally different. Okay, changes the whole entire meaning and basically destroys the entire creation process as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
Just but making a not pronouncing a Dalit properly.
Right.
So our speech does have that effect. And of course, now since I'm involved with the local council of against domestic abuse, so they say words hurt. That's the expression. You know, how you talk to people definitely has an effect on them.
Yes, it does.
Okay, more and more stinging than a slap is a discouraging word.
More permanent.
Definitely.
Yes.
As he says, "Kemosha ein machshavta machshavas seino." And so too it is, our thoughts are not like his thoughts. Why does he have to say this also? If it is that our speech is not like Hashem's speech, so why does he have to say our thoughts are not like Hashem's thoughts? Is because our speech never leave us. I mean, our thoughts never leave.
Right.
Our thoughts are always part of us. They're always
right.
connected to us.
Right.
So you can think, okay, speech. There's a difference in parallels. Okay, Hashem's speech never leaves him, and the Chayas that's coming into the world is always part and parcel of Hashem, which is the point that he wants to make of this whole point of this chapter. And when we speak, the words are gone, there's nothing we can do about it. But my thought...
It's like, I'm like Hashem.
Oh! Uh-huh. So my thought is still inside me. If I don't want to think it, I could pull it back in, mm-hmm. and I'll be better off for it, or whatever. No one will know any different anyway. And no, what I'm thinking about that guy, he's never going to know anyway. That's why it says one of the greatest compliments that you could pay to somebody is to say the Teicha Kabara is the expression in Hebrew. His insides are like his outsides, meaning the way that he's presenting himself is truly the way that he is inside.
Right.
He's not saying one thing and feeling another thing.
Right.
Okay, this is a great compliment to pay to somebody.
Right.
So he says, the Pasuk says, Kidiksiv, ki lo machshas fostai machshav oseichem. We say it's in the Haftorah in fast days. My thoughts are not like your thoughts. Which, what does it mean over there that Isaiah is saying when he says, my thoughts are not like your thoughts? Is, I think that this is the way things should go. And Hashem has different plans. You know, in the way that Hashem thinks, Hashem's not thinking the way I think.
Mm.
Okay, which you can equate that to, well, Hashem, I think one way, and you have a whole different total look on outlook on the way things should be. Your whole perspective is not the same. So you could say, my thoughts are not like your thoughts, mine being me personal,
right.
and you being yours personal.
Right.
Okay, so that's how you could interpret that. Hashem has his perspective on how things are running. I have my perspective on how things should run. But the Alter Rebbe is explaining here that when it says my thoughts are not like your thoughts, what happens when I think? Nothing. What happens when Hashem thinks? The entire creation process has presented itself in potential.
Right.
And since it is that Hashem is Ein HaKayach Chaser Poel, With Hashem, potential and actual are the same thing because Hashem is above time. So for something to potentially exist, like, for example, the creation, means it's already in existence. You never heard that expression before? For Hashem, the potential is the same as the actual.
I've not heard that.
Okay, that's an expression which is talked about in a great length in Chassidus. Ein hakoyach chaser
poyel.
Okay, the potential is not the actual is not lost to the potential.
I guess I've heard the concept before, but I don't think I've ever heard the statement. It's good, yeah.
Okay, because Hashem is above time. Hashem is not saying, okay, at this point it's going to happen. At this point it did happen.
There's no such thing as potential with Hashem.
Correct. Okay, the potential and the actual exist simultaneously.
They're the same, right?
Okay, so where does what's the potential? So what's the deal? It's with us,
right? Because ours when you come into time based.
Well, yes, when we come into us, now we have the potential. We come into this world, so it says
an action based for that matter.
Yes, well, it's called the world of Asiya.
Right.
You have a mimer that the Rebbe said in Tavshin Lamed Ches. After he had his heart attack, Parshas Nayach. It's considered one of the more famous Maimorim of the Rebbe, maybe because it's one of the shortest, because he just had a heart attack and wasn't saying long discourses. But the idea that he conveys over there, he asks the question, what does a neshama have to come into the world for? If it is that the neshama, before it comes into the world, is totally completely united with the essence of Hashem.
Yeah, what's the point?
And then it comes down into this world, and what happens? It goes through 70, 80 years. And it does all these mitzvahs, and it comes back, and what's its reward? It's united with the essence of Hashem. So what did it gain? Before it came down, it was united with the essence of Hashem. After it came back, it was united with the essence of Hashem. So the Rebbe said, what people tell me, was a chiddush, a big deal, and a tremendous insight, that before it came down, the neshama was only in a state of potential. It was potentially united with Hashem in an ultimate way. Because Hashem is above time and place. And Hashem knows what this neshama is going to do and has already planned for what this neshama is going to do and considered as though the neshama already did it. So it's there. As far as Hashem is concerned, it's totally, completely united. But as far as the neshama is concerned, it's there in potential.
Right.
Once it goes down, it comes out. Now it has the pile. Now it has the actual. But Hashem's not missing that.
Right. Only the neshama.
This neshama. This that the neshama came down and did whatever it did for how long it was in this world.
That's a brilliant.
And now goes back. Hashem's not saying, "Man, I finally got closure."
No.
Hashem's not doing that. Hashem is there because Hashem is totally, completely complete. But tachlis hashlemus, even before the world was created, we're not here to make Hashem feel better. We're not giving Hashem something to do. Hashem wasn't bored one sort of before day and said, "Man, I'd really like something to play with. You know what? I'll make a plaything." Even though you look at what we're doing over here, it seems like this is one big game. But we're not here for Hashem. We're here for us.
Right.
And he says, my ways are much higher than your ways. Same thing. Why is it that we even call it speech? Is because we have nothing else to call it. It's just by an example. It's an analogy.
Right.
So where's the point of analogy? Where is it that my speech and Hashem's speech are comparable? Who megala lishmoy mashahayat safin vanilla v'machshavtei? That when a person speaks, what is he doing? He has certain desires, certain things he wants to he wants to let other people know that this is what he's thinking about. And since we don't have these USB ports stuck in our brains that we can just sort of plug each other in, and we haven't figured out how to go wireless yet either, as far as that goes.
Technology doesn't work yet?
No. There's no app on your iPhone for that.
Yeah.
So we have to talk.
Thank God for small favors.
Yes.
Oh, man.
Could you imagine how much trouble you'd be in if people could read your thoughts?
Oh, man.
You could not probably walk out of the house for 5 minutes. And never mind
no,
even walking.
You couldn't live.
You couldn't even be in the house for 5 minutes.
You couldn't live.
If your wife knew what you were thinking about.
Oh, come on, come on. If anybody knew.
Correct. Okay.
It's painful enough knowing Hashem knows.
Sometimes it's painful enough knowing that I know.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah.
Okay, so he wants to reveal that which is hidden in his thought. Kach l'mayla, so to also Hashem, be'ein zav baruch hu, yitzias ha'or v'chayis memeni yizborach, me'helem ala gilay levora oylam aslach ha'yoysam. You're talking about, what does Hashem want to do? Hashem wants to create a level of consciousness that appears to be, and you can put that word appears in italics, that appears to be separate from Hashem. Uh-huh. We, in this world, consider ourselves not part and parcel of Hashem. Okay? You take a look at Malachim. Angels recognize their own existence, but they recognize that their existence is their neshama, and they recognize that their neshama is Elokus.
Right.
So they see that they're not separate from Hashem. Whereas we, in this world, we do not see our connection. Okay, we're walking around, we're not connected to anything, people don't have roots.
Right.
You know, we're not connected to anything in specifically. Right. All we need to do is every once in a while we need to inhale and occasionally exhale, and every once in a while put some stuff in our mouths so that a little bit of glucose gets up to our brain, and we're fine.
Right.
Okay? But that's all we really need. Because now, so that's what Hashem wants, and in order for this realm of conscious to exist, that it appears to itself as being separate from Hashem, as he says, to bring it out from the concealed to the revealed, to create the worlds, and to enliven them, Nikur B'Shem Dibur, we're going to give that a good word, we're going to come up with this word called speech. Okay, because that's what my speaking does. My speaking tells you what's inside me. God speaking reveals what's in potential and brings it out to the actual so that it can exist as a separate thing. The hein heinas, what's Hashem's speech? How is Hashem's speech manifest itself? Hein heinas sar maimaris shebehem nivra ha'olam. First of all, we have the 10 utterances by which the world was created. I'll talk about this in just a second. Became Shar Kolater Navim Ukasivum Shahisigan even Bamara Nivuasam. And so too also the rest of the books of the Bible, all the prophecy, when all those prophets said, and the Lord spaketh unto me.
Yes,
he was speaking. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't have any other way of understanding what it was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly get this thing inside their brain. It's not that they heard it with their ears.
Right.
They felt a something, and the way that their brain interpreted it was speech.
Mm-hmm.
God said this to me. How else am I able to say word for word, verbatim, what it is that Hashem wants me to convey? Must be Hashem said it, quote unquote, to me. Now, very interesting thing about the 10 utterances by which the world was created. Okay, I'm not going to make you test your knowledge and see how many of the 10 you know. Okay, because it says in Pirkei Avos, how do we know there are 10? It says in Pirkei Avos that there are 10 utterances.
Mm-hmm.
Why did we have to rely on Pirkei Avos to say that there are 10 times that Hashem said, let there be something or others? Why did you just go count them? Because if you go and count them, if you open up Genesis 1:1, chapter 1 of the book of Bereishis, and you count the Vayomer Hashem, Yehi whatevers, you're going to find 9.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda, when he wrote Pirkei Avos, has to come and tell us, oh, by the way, there's not 9, there are 10. Because what's the 10th one? So Rabbi Yehuda even answers that question. And he says, V'haloi b'maymer echad yachali bara. Hashem could have created the whole thing in one utterance. If Hashem would have created that world in one utterance, what would it have been? Let's say you're God, okay? And you want to make an entire creation in one utterance. what would you say?
Let there be.
Let there be a creation. Yeah. That's what Bereshis is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because the Gemara answers, Bereshis nami maimerhu. Bereshis is also one of the ten utterances. In fact, Bereshis is, that's the powerhouse behind all the ten.
Right.
Because what does Bereshis make? How do you translate Bereshis? In the beginning. What is that? What is that? What did we just create?
Time.
We just created a beginning.
Time and space,
right.
And whatever.
Yeah. We just created a beginning. It's all right there.
Right. Correct.
The whole entire creation process is there because na is tchilasim b'seifan is the expression b'seifan b'tchilasim. You can tell what the beginning purpose was by looking at the end, and by looking at the end, you could see what the beginning starting point was. Okay, that's called forensics. Mm-hmm. In modern English. Mm-hmm. So that Hashem created the world with 10 utterances, mm-hmm. So even Bereshis, which really what happened when there was a Bereshis, there was really nothing happened at that point, because the translation of the word Bereshis is in the beginning of Hashem's creating the heavens and the earth, and God said, let there be light. Mm-hmm. Is how you would translate it. So there's nothing happening actually in Bereshis. Okay, and we can talk about this, and we can talk about this at great length later in its proper place. Hashem's speech and thought are so to speak. We put the word so to speak on thought and speech, not so to speak that they're united.
Right.
Okay, because Hashem doesn't have a thought and speech. Hashem, so to speak, has
so-called, yeah.
A so-called thought and speech,
right.
Are totally united with Hashem in an ultimate unity. Similarly, how does Hashem's speech exist? Hashem's speech exists not like our thoughts. What we said before, Hashem's thoughts are not like our thoughts.
Right.
It would be similar to the way that Hashem's utterances exist would be the same way that the concept of any type of concept we talked about last time exists in the essence of our soul. We give the example of having a house. Okay? I might not know that I want to have a house, but since it says in the Gemara that if I don't have a house, I'm not a person, so deep down there, I know I want to have deep down there, I want to have a house.
The fact is you want to have a house.
Yes,
whether
but,
you want it or not.
But, I don't know about it yet. Right. That wanting, that desire to have a house is so intrinsically part of me,
right.
Before I start thinking about acquiring a house,
right.
We don't have any letters of speech. We don't even have a cognizant concept yet, right. Of acquiring a house. We have a deep-rooted, right. Essential desire to have a house.
It's not even a rotzen yet.
No. It's not even a rotzen yet.
Yeah,
it's an essential expression that I have a house.
Yeah.
So every utterance, right down, starting from Bereshis and going right down to Let's Make Man, every single one of those expressions is an essential expression of Hashem. Okay, now what are we going to do with this? Stay tuned. Sha'az hayo oisis ha-machshava ha-dibur ha-zenim shachas mechemda v'tshuka zubekech v'lev yeh u'miyuchedesh sham b'tachlis ha-yichud. That there, before a person even thinks about it, it's only in a stage of essential wanting, so it's totally and completely united with an ultimate unity v'shor shan in their root, which are the ten attributes of the soul. We just turned the page. That what are the ten attributes of the soul? That they are the wisdom and intellect which is in the brain, and the desires and longing in the heart. So too it is that Hashem's thought and speech are totally and completely, absolutely united with His essence and being, gam achas sheyotze dibura el apoel bebrias ha'olamos, even after Hashem has uttered those words, and the world is in existence, k'mo shehayim yichud imo kodem bebrias ha'olam, the same way it was before the world was created. That's what we said before, and he quoted this before in chapter 20. You're the way the word before the world was created. You're the way you are the way after the world is created. Right. We do not displace Hashem.
Right.
Our presence is not pushing away godliness.
Right. Or changing.
In any way, shape, or form. We are a manifestation of godliness. So if that be the case, then how is it that I exist? If I am nothing more than a manifestation of Hashem, so I'm not separate from Hashem.
Of course not.
As far as Hashem's position goes, this is what the whole Shor Yochid V'Emunah is trying to point out, this whole second section of the Tanya. If I am part and parcel from Hashem, how do I exist? You just said over here that how does the world, the utterances that brought the world into existence, that we're calling speech, because Hashem wants a realm which is separate from Hashem, which appears to be separate from Hashem. How could you possibly have such a thing, even to appear separate from Hashem? Because from Hashem's point, there's nothing separate from Hashem. We just said it's not like Hashem's letters of speech are like our letters of speech. Hashem's letters of speech are like our desires before we even know they're desires.
Right.
Totally, completely united with us. Like he gave the example before, the sun ray before it's emitted from the sun. So how do we exist? So the Alter Rebbe answers, well, of course, that's the point of the creation process. Because Hashem is a kol yachal, Hashem can do anything. And Hashem has the ability to limit his revelation so as to make it look as though we exist. What does that make us, though? The big emphasis and concept, which is the real thrust behind Chabad Hasidus. What are we trying to achieve? All the Chabad Hasidus, these two bookcases and another bookcase in there, what is it that Chabad Hasidus is trying to accomplish? Is that a person should be bittel. Bittel means that they should lose their selflessness. Not that they should become a shmata. Not they should become somebody's pawn or puppet.
You said lose their selflessness.
Lose their self.
Self.
Become selflessness.
Become selfless. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I'm sorry. I lost my selflessness a long time ago.
I'm all about that.
Yes. Anyway, sorry. Anyway.
Yeah.
And with this, there are different levels of feeling. The Friedrich Rebbe talked at great length about different levels of non-feeling in a whole series of Maimarim, which he said in 1939, right before World War II in Warsaw. And they were first published in 1951 during the year between the passing of the Friedrich Rebbe and the Rebbe taking on the leadership. And it's in a book called, which I have sitting on itself, called The Book of Maimarim from Tafshin Yud Aleph, which the previous Rebbe had already passed away already in Tafshin Yud. So how do you have a Tafshin Yud Aleph? Because these were Maimarim that the Rebbe always wanted to have published. Because they were probably the most difficult Maimarim in all of Hasidus. And he talks about their different levels of bittul. A level of bittul which we can achieve, which is not beyond us, is called bittul b'metzius. Bittul b'metzius means, I exist. Which I know that, that's like given, hello. But my existence is totally and completely dependent upon the godliness bringing me into existence. You have the sun. How long is the sun going to burn for?
It's done.
A few
trillion real years.
The sun is going to burn forever. The sun is a nitzchius. Hashem made it.
Okay, until Hashem decides no.
And, correct.
Right.
As long as there is time and space,
right,
the sun will shine. Correct. You don't have anything about the sun suddenly supernovaing, whatever the verb is.
Whatever.
Okay, becoming a brown dwarf or a black hole and sucking us out of existence. yeah. Okay, and becoming Hawking's radiation at the other side.
Yeah.
No, you don't have anything to worry about that, because as long as there is time, by definition, the sun will be shining.
Yes, but I would start to die.
They're programmed to die. That's fine. The sun is not a star. The sun, so, I mean, astronomers will call the sun a star, because it has, if they imagine that the properties of the stars that they're seeing out there, that actually if we were within 93 million miles of those stars, we would say, hey, that looks just like our sun. Maybe that is true. I would assume it's true. There's no reason why not to think otherwise.
If they were equal, whatever.
But the Torah, which the Torah is, it says, that on the fourth day, Hashem created the sun, the moon, and the stars. He doesn't say Shar HaKechavim. He doesn't say the other stars. It says the stars. Right. Stars are stars, sun is sun. Stars have specific purposes. They are for conveying navigational mapping for people at night. And they act as intermediaries in the form of the mazoilos, the constellations, to allow godliness to be directed down here into this world. The sun has a different purpose. The sun is supplying light, heat, warmth, and life. It's got a different job.
And certain time calculations.
Yeah. Okay. So the sun, is the sun truly eternal? No. Because the sun has a starting point. Anything that starts is going to stop. And at some time in the future, when Hashem says, okay, I'm going back to the no time mode, the sun will cease to exist. But right now, and if you were to analyze the sun, if we could get that close, go send a probe onto the sun and analyze its what it's doing over there, we would come to the conclusion that the sun will be shining forever. The sun is eternal according to the paradigm in which we are living. We do exist. 100%. How do I know I exist? Why am I not just some dream that's of, you know, God?
Because God said God created.
Because it said, Bereishis bara Elokim es hashamayim ve'es haaretz. In the beginning, God created a heaven and the earth.
Right.
That tells me that there is something called a creation. The word creation means a separate entity. There's the creator and the creation. They are not the same thing. They're two separate entities. Our existence is that we do, yes, indeed exist, but our existence is totally and completely dependent upon the godliness which is enclosed within us to be within us to keep us in existence.
The Ruach and Hashem.
The Dvar Havaya. The speech of Hashem.
Right.
And it's the same thing, for example, you have a sun ray. Okay? The sun ray is connected to its source.
Right.
And hence it could shine down here. What happens if you put something in between the sun ray and the sun?
It's gone.
The sun ray stops shining.
It's gone.
So there is this connection that we have. In order for us to exist as separate entities, it must be that the godliness is totally is connected to us, keeping us in this existence.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned last week, we have an example for this now that the Alter Rebbe couldn't give. Whether he knew about it, maybe he didn't know about it, but he couldn't give it because no one else knew about it yet. And that being, if you were to look at our existence, our plane of consciousness through a very strong microscope, what would you see? We talked about this last week, I think. If you looked at the table.
Yeah.
Right?
You'd see a bunch of
you'd see electrons, molecules, subatomic particles, quarks, and quarks are made out of energy.
Right.
So if I sat and I thought for a long time, what would I be able to feel? I wouldn't be able to see it, but I would be able to feel, to sense that this table is energy. And if it's energy, what is it? It's Hashem. And what is making the table exist as a table is because the energy, which is this table, is configured in this specific way that it makes it into a table. Mm-hmm. We don't see the energy, because if you could see the energy, you wouldn't see anything else. Right. We see a table. The energy is hidden. But the table exists in its present state because this is the way that Hashem is creating it right this moment, that it should exist as a table. Should we stop here or should we run to the end?
Let's stop here.
Okay.
No,
we'll take it again from Kacha Mamish Derech Mashal. We'll take it from the second line next time.
There's a lot more in this, and I'd rather not run through.
Right. This is pretty heavy duty stuff. To be continued.
Yeah.